Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're highlighting a presentation by Scott Phelps at the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Mr. Phelps is the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign. During the conference, he pointed out that the best way to restore a culture of marriage and family is to reach a new generation of American youth on the clear, objective benefits of marriage and family. In this segment, Mr. Phelps outlines the Success Sequence Program.
The Success Sequence Program, the positive alternative to sex education. Now, sometimes if I had a little bit more time, I start off with the problem of sex education. I could spend, you know, our whole time talking about and showing you slides about how bad it is out there. My guess is you probably know that already, and that's why you're here today. But what you may not know is that Planned Parenthood is not only the largest provider of abortions in America, they are also the largest provider of sex education programs in America. And that the standard default health education slash sex education program across the country is largely a Planned Parenthood type program. And so what we want to do is go to schools and not stand out in front with a sign saying, you know, stop giving condoms to our kids. I'm not against that if you want to do that, but that's just not what we do. What we do is provide schools with an alternative. Here's a better way to do it. The way that we have packaged our program is around the concepts of the success sequence, which beautifully fit the message of abstinence until marriage. You're going to see how the success sequence envelops that in a beautiful way and how we're able to present this to parents, churches, schools, and so forth. All right, so a positive alternative to sex education. And I would say that the whole point of our ministry is solutions focused, right? We could whine all day long about what's happening in our culture, or we can, you know, roll up our sleeves and get to work and work on fixing it. And that's what we're all about. We're about fixing the problem. So what we want to do to fix the problem is not just complain about the bad, but offer and provide the good. That's what we're all about. We very much value and need the Illinois Family Institute to call out the bad, but then we've got to come in the other door and say, here's something good. And so it's an important partnership. We need both. We can't all do everything, right? But you can do what you do really, really well, and we do what we do really, really well. All right. So, positive alternative. The Success Sequence Program teaches youth the optimal pathway for future success with a clear emphasis on the objective benefits of reserving all sexual activity and childbearing for marriage. So that is the message of the Success Sequence. The first part, the optimal pathway for future success, is what the success sequence is, which we'll get to in just a moment. And then we are going to make a very clear emphasis in our program on why reserving all sexual activity and childbearing for marriage is going to be good for you. It's healthy. It's the way that opens up opportunities for you in the future. And so that is at the heart of the success sequence. All right, the report done by Wendy Wang and Brad Wilcox several years back, called the Millennial Success Sequence. We rely on this work very much. In this report, what they did is they took the concept of the success sequence and then they applied it to the millennial generation to sort of get a sense of where we're at today. So here's a Wall Street Journal article on that report. The sequence is the secret to success. And the Wall Street Journal was talking about the report that they did. What is the success sequence? Well, the researchers at the Institute for Family Studies, American Enterprise Institute, the Brookings Institute, they've come out with these wonderful reports that go something like this. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby and the baby. Now, although I knew that at 5 years old, kids today who are growing up into young adults, it's a foreign concept. It's a foreign concept. Specifically, the success sequence as it's codified by the think tanks, it goes something like this. If we can help young people get an education, high school, college, GED, just get an education, get a diploma, if we can help them do that, and then help them get a job, if they can figure out how to be self-sufficient, not dependent upon their parents or the government or welfare, or any kind of dependency, they're self-sufficient, they get a job. Students who get an education, get a job, and then marry before having children tend to be successful individuals. They tend not to fall below the poverty line, end up on food stamps or welfare. They tend to be able to form a healthy future marriage and family. And so this is what has been, as I said, codified by the think tanks as the success sequence. And so this is understanding what it is. Now, as we apply it to the millennial generation, what you find is the millennials are not doing so well here, that you've got about 55% of the millennials that did not follow the sequence, that they had the child either before marriage or they are still unmarried. So take the 55 and break it down. 25% had the child before marriage, and then 30% who had the child are still unmarried. So not looking too good for the millennials on that score. Then they compared it with the boomers, and you can see a sharp drop off from about 2/3 of boomers to 40% of millennials that waited to have the baby until marriage. And again, of those three steps, education, work, and marry before having child, it's that number three that's really the secret sauce. That's the main point of the success sequence. And that's what we're trying to help young people understand is, and not just wait until marriage to have the baby, but reserving all sexual activity in childbearing for marriage. Those two things go together. The only sure way to save childbearing for marriage is through abstinence by waiting until marriage. So we make that point very clear. So those who follow that pattern, oh, there's a complete inversion in the income brackets of those who waited and those who did. And again, it makes sense, doesn't it? It just makes sense that if you wait, have the baby after you're in a marriage relationship, you're going to be in a much better situation. I remember one time I was on a radio program, and we were talking about the subject of abortion came up. And that's how I got into this in the first place, was trying to save the babies and realized that 85% of abortions occur outside of a marriage relationship. So if we can encourage marriage, we'll reduce the abortion rates. Someone earlier had called up and said something like, at the time, they said there's 1.2 million unwanted, pregnancies, unwanted babies in the world, whatever, what are you going to do? And the idea was, of course, you kill them, abortion. So that's why, because they're unwanted. I said, well, the reason this person thinks that there's 1.2 million so-called unwanted babies is because babies are supposed to be born into a cradle, and the cradle is called marriage. And so the answer to the problem of 1.2 so-called unmarried babies isn't to kill the babies, it's to build more cradles. And so what we're about is cradle building, right? We want to form more healthy, stable marriages for those babies to be born into. We think that's the best solution to the abortion problem. All right, I got off on something there. Okay, it's okay. Now, one thing that's interesting is here's the American Enterprise Institute doing a report on the success sequence where they surveyed a broad swath of the public and found out that, hey, people are for this. When you explain what the success sequence is, generally, people are like, you should be teaching that to our kids. They looked at parents on the right and then just general all Americans on the left. What is that, 70 to 80% of the population, whether they're parents or not parents, everybody, 80% of the people are like, yeah, do that. That makes sense. Well, then they looked at it generationally. They said, well, let's see what the kids think and what the older people think. Gen Z, millennials, Gen X, boomers, there's your silent generation. Then look, boom, wow. You've still got, 80-ish plus percent of consistently across generations that when you lay out what the success sequence is, they're like, yeah, do that. So it's exciting to see, regardless of the generation, that the strong support for teaching the success, whether they're parents, and then generationally it's consistent, and then also politically, whether they're Democrat, Independent, Republican, liberal, moderate, conservative, a lot of support for teaching the success sequence. So what we want to do is go to schools, and we do go to schools and say, hey, listen, here's something that's really, sex education is controversial, and it should be. So stop it, knock it off. Here's something you can do that's not controversial that people think is a really good idea. And you know why? Because it is a good idea. So I think that's really, really important. Okay. So the three unsustainable trends that we see in our work The reason I say the three trends that animate our work are the increasing non-marital birth rate, the declining marriage rate, and the declining fertility rate. End of the war, 1945, 9 months later, kaboom, right? So there's your baby boom, 1946, after the end of World War II. And then Woodstock, 1969, sex and drugs and rock and roll. You don't need to be married anymore. You just get yourself some contraception. You have sex with a whole bunch of people. It'll be fabulous. What could go wrong? But look at post-Woodstock. Look at post-sexual revolution, what has happened to the marriage rates in the United States. They've gone off a cliff. And so this is of great concern.
Scott Phelps, the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference. More of his remarks from that event after this.
Where did the information come from? This is Ken Ham, author of Miraculous, the Ken Ham and Answers in Genesis story. Yesterday we learned life can't come from non-life, but let's pretend for a moment it did. Then what? How does the rest of life come about? The typical answer is by natural selection and mutations. But most mutations are either harmful or neutral. A few have some positive effect only in certain environments. So natural selection is only going to select for a very small number of mutations in very specific environments. And both mutations and natural selection work with already existing genetic information. They can't create anything. Life didn't arise by naturalistic processes. It was created by God.
Looking for more answers and apologetics information? Visit our website at answersradio.com to learn more.
Need somewhere to belong? Try here. We're socialites. Find us at socialites.blog. We aim to cultivate meaningful friendships and create places for people to come together face to face.
We do weekly group, Bible study groups, swing dancing. We even do bonfires on occasion.
We also connect churches via their YA groups in the Chicagoland area.
We want to be the answer to the question of, where do you even meet people anymore? Come find us at socialites.blog. Check out some of the events we got going or any of the groups that we host regularly.
Socialites.blog.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're featuring a presentation made by Scott Phelps during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Mr. Phelps is the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign. In this segment of Spotlight, he'll discuss how government school sex education programs are codifying the sexual revolution to the detriment of America.
So I'm talking about the three trends that animate our work. One is we're very concerned about the declining marriage rate. I think that's really important for us to recognize and be aware of and see. And I call these unsustainable trends. Like, you just can't keep going this way. You can't keep having marriage rates declining in this way. At some point, you're going to be, you know, up a river without a paddle if we're not there already. So it's not a trend that is sustainable. It's got to be dealt with. It's got to be fixed. And we're proposing that teaching young people the success sequence is the best way to fix the problem. All right. Now, again, 1969 Woodstock is the beginning of the explosion of the non-marital birth rate. Today in the United States, 40% of American children born outside the context of a marriage relationship. Wasn't always that way. In fact, look at the stability, 1940, 50, 60, and then boom, sexual revolution, Woodstock, here we go, off the charts. There you are. And our concern, coming back to sex education, is what I believe, sex education is nothing more than a codification of the sexual revolution. That what we're teaching in American schools is what the sexual revolution was. Here's all the different types of contraception you can use, because we know that you're going to be having the sex, you know. So here's all the different kinds of contraception that you can use, and there's no talk about marriage. I was on a TV show with this lady out in LA. It was a TV show called The Doctors, and it was a sex ed lady, and we were debating back and forth. And I said this, I said, look, tell me, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know of a single sex education program in America that will even give kids the option of waiting until marriage. And you know what she said? Yeah, no, we don't teach that. Exactly. So you've got sex education across American schools teaching kids about contraception, and there's no message. I don't mean it's a bad message about marriage. There's no message about marriage. Forget about it. It's just not there. And so we seek to fill that void. We think it's really necessary, right? At my training seminars, I always pull out this article and I quote from it because it goes to this point. So after I explain that the sexual revolution is the heart of this problem, I say, that's not me talking, that's the smart people. Over the course of the last 40 years, more children have been born and reared outside of a married home, at least in part because the sexual revolution undercut the norm of premarital sexual abstinence. Most scholars who have studied the nation's recent retreat from marriage over the last four decades agree that the sexual revolution played an important role in fueling this retreat. Dr. George Akerlof, a Nobel Prize-winning economist at the University of California, Berkeley, not a right-wing think tank. Dr. George Akerlof, a Nobel Prize-winning economist at the University of California, Berkeley, argues that the sexual revolution, aided in part by widespread contraception, fueled the dramatic increase in premarital sex and reduced the normative imperative that men should be take responsibility for the children they help bring into the world by marrying. These two developments, in turn, led to dramatic increases in non-marital childbearing. Hello! Hello! So here's Brad Wilcox, University of Virginia, George Akerlof, University of Berkeley, saying, University of California, Berkeley, saying that the sexual revolution, aided by widespread contraception, led to dramatic increases in non-marital childbearing, and that's exactly what we're teaching in our schools. Use contraception, no mention, no relationship. Sex has no relationship to marriage. It's not even brought up. It's not a topic. It's not a thing. In fact, I had a school in this area reach out to me a few years ago, and they said, would you, you know, we like your program, it's pretty good, except there's this thing where it talks about marriage. And they said, could you change where it says marriage to, like, you know, long-term committed relationship? Because we really want to use your program, but we can't, you know, because, you know, marriage. So I emailed the person back, and I said, first of all, I didn't say no. I emailed the person back, and I said, all of our material is based on research and data, and it's reviewed by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. In fact, we're just up for review again. They constantly look over our stuff. And so do me a favor. Would you send me the research that supports the change that you want us to make? We'll be happy to review that. Did I get an answer? There isn't an answer. First of all, you can't even define it. You can't define it. If I say, you know, save sex until you're in a long-term committed relationship, what is that? I'm serious. What is that? If I had you each take out a pen and write down a definition for long-term committed relationship, how many definitions would I get? How many people are here today? Right? You have to understand high school years are like dog years anyway, right? So if we've been going out for 6 months, long-term, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? 1 year, we're getting married. I mean, if I tell kids that abstinence is saving sex for a long-term mutual monogamous committed relationship, as people want to say, what are they going to say? Oh, yeah, we've got that. Yeah, we've been going 3 months. We've been going out. Yeah, we're tight like that. Right? I'm serious. So in other words, you've just green-lighted them. You just told them you're good to go. This is why the marriage component is such a critical part of the message. Oh, I was reading something. Reduce the normative imperative. Men should take responsibility for the children they help bring into the world by marrying. Furthermore, Dr. Akerlof concludes that the sexual revolution played an important role in the nation's recent retreat from marriage over the last four decades and is indirectly responsible for the social consequences of that retreat. In his words, quote, just at the time about 1970, the permanent cure to poverty seems to be on the horizon, and just at the time that women had obtained the tools to control the number and timing of their children, single motherhood and the feminization of poverty began their long and steady rise. Furthermore, he thinks the retreat from marriage, caused in part by the sexual revolution, was also implicated in the crime shock and the substance abuse shock of the 70s and the 80s. Indeed, a number of other studies find that the retreat from marriage is strongly linked to increases in child poverty, crime, and substance abuse since the 1960s. The bottom line, Brad concludes, is this: the erosion of the norm of premarital sexual abstinence, both in belief and behavior, appears to have played an important role in the weakening of American family life and, in turn, some of the nation's most pressing social problems. Thus, the norm that sex should be reserved for marriage would seem to increase the likelihood that any individual could enjoy a strong and satisfying family life. Furthermore, increased public support for such a norm would seem likely to foster happier and healthier families in the United States as a whole. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Isn't that right? Isn't that right? So I think Brad just lays it out so clear that I read that at every training seminar I do because it's so clear. What you've got is when you have, let's call it the great divorce, when you have the divorce in the 1960s of sex and marriage, that is the sexual dysfunction that we're living in right now, right? And the way I describe it to kids a lot of times in the classroom, if I'm doing kids or even my training workshops is, you know, we like to go camping and we've been to some of the great campgrounds, Yellowstone, the Tetons, Yosemite, love to go camping at some of these wonderful, beautiful places. And every time we go camping, there's always a sign up that says, campfires in designated fire pit area only. Okay? Doesn't say you can't have a campfire. It's called a campfire. So it's a fire you have at camp. So it doesn't say no campfires. It says we've kind of dug down a hole and we put a bunch of rocks around it. And now, if you're going to make a fire, do it in there. And then you get your guitar, a little kumbaya, roast some marshmallows, make s'mores. Yay! But what? You can't just go making a fire anywhere you want. You'll burn the place down. So we put up these signs. Have a campfire, but have it in the fire pit that's designed for the fire to be contained and fun and good and kumbaya. And sex within marriage is the fire in the fireplace, in the fire pit. You just go having sex anywhere you want, you'll burn the place down. We're living in a forest fire. All the sexual dysfunction in our culture today is rooted right here. So when I do the training seminars, and I'll ask you the same question I ask them, can we flip it around? Can we come back down the other side? Can we get the non-marital birth rate to start going down? Because there is no down here. It's plateaued, that's good, but it's not going down. Can we get it? Can we flip the graph? Can we come back down the other side? Yes. Anybody else? Anybody else? Okay. Anybody else? Really? Because I'm not feeling it. You know, when I say I don't feel it, I'm being honest. I'm being honest. Like, in what is my hope that that's going to turn? Of course, I trust in the Lord. Yeah, of course. But what's going to make it turn? So I tell my teachers the same thing I'm going to tell you. I don't see this changing unless we get serious and we wake up, knock off the nonsense, and help a new generation of American youth understand the benefits of reserving all sexual activity for marriage, what marriage is and why marriage matters and why that's good. We've got to do a much better job of educating our youth on the beauty and the value of marriage and family. That's what our work is all about. We think it's critical. We think it's critical to the cultural good and to our nation and for the glory of God. We absolutely believe that. Can it turn? It's a Herculean task, and we're up for it. We're up for it. And I hope you are too. The difficulties, the challenges that kids have who don't have the benefit of a strong family foundation. So important to realize the need that these kids have and to understand the benefits of married mom and dad. I tell people I am a horrible mother. My wife does not do the dad thing well. You hear what I'm saying? Kids need a mom. They need a dad, the way God planned it. All right, there is a short video actually put out by the New York Times. I think it's called something like Demographic Winter. It's only 12 minutes. You should see it. It's interesting. The New York Times put this out, warning about the crisis of population decline. And it's really, it's a serious issue. It's one that is not on a lot of people's radar. It needs to be on our radar because it is a serious, serious concern, not just nationally, globally. Years ago, when Russia hit 1.5, Vladimir Putin made this statement. He said, quote, "Without exaggeration, the central problem of contemporary Russia is demography, strengthening the family and increasing the birth rate." So Of all the problems as president of Russia that I see, the number one issue is the declining birth rate and strengthening the family and increasing the birth rate. Why? Why? Because what's happening? Countries are literally going extinct. South Korea is first up, by the way. We're at 1.6. Speaking at a Korean church recently, so I did the research before going over there, I was shocked. It is the lowest in the world at 0.8, half of where we're at. It's a problem. It's a problem. So, you know, Japan, for example, I think they're 1.3. A lot of older people, not a lot of younger people, so it's going to happen. And so Putin understands this. In fact, in Russia, they started something called Conception Day. Maybe you've heard about this. Have you heard about this in Russia? Italy picked up on this and they're doing it too. Conception Day. It is as it sounds. Holiday. Everybody, you go home, you make the baby. It's a thing. It's a thing. So I used to joke around about, I was like, and then they get, what they did is they said, we're going to have literally a national holiday, and we're going to give you, whoever hits 9 months to the day from Conception Day, you get a prize. And I used to joke around about, it's probably like a minivan. Then I saw a news article, it's a minivan. I was like, are you kidding me right now? Yeah, they get a minivan. So Norway is having, I mean, look, all the European countries are below us. It's a real problem. Hungary, Romania, it's a global problem. And so this is absent migration, by the way, this is, which is one reason why Europe is maintaining its population only through dramatic mass migration. It's a problem globally. And the New York Times video brings this out. And we need to be aware of it, okay? Where this is going to come home is, what are we teaching our kids? Okay, what are we teaching our kids? We've been pushing contraception in schools for decades. So with contraception and abortion, where are you? Where are you? You're killing the next generation. And so it's really important to understand what it is that we're teaching our kids. Now, we have, over the years, we've been doing this, I've been doing this 25 years now, and I have, you know, I started out, I wanted to save the babies, and I realized if we could help young people not be sexually active as teenagers, they wouldn't get pregnant, they wouldn't have an abortion, save the babies. But my message, as is largely still the message today in people who teach abstinence, is don't have sex because bad things can happen to you if you have sex, like pregnancy or disease. Have you heard that? Don't have the sex because bad things could happen, like pregnancy or disease. Well, what's wrong with that picture? Is pregnancy like a disease? Is pregnancy a bad thing that can happen to you? So we have changed. I have, over the years, you know, I'm constantly learning, growing. And now what we say is, we are not a pregnancy prevention program. We are a pregnancy promotion program. We are pro-baby. We think that pregnancy is a good thing. We don't think pregnancy is a problem to be avoided. We think it's a hope to be cherished. So, thank you. Thank you. Yes. We don't think that the message of young people should be, you want to avoid getting pregnant because pregnancy is bad. What we want to say is, pregnancy is not bad. It's good. It's so good. Save it, protect it, preserve it for the context of a marriage relationship. So that baby has the benefit of being raised by a married mom and dad. So you're not choosing abstinence because you want to avoid a bad thing like pregnancy, but rather you're understanding the beauty and the value of marriage for the nurture and care and love of that baby. I don't want to teach kids that babies are a nuisance, okay? I want to teach them that babies are amazing, wonderful, beautiful. So we are pro-marriage. We are pro-pregnancy, we are pro-baby, we are pro-life, okay? So it's a consistency of messaging, right? It's a consistency of messaging. Babies are wonderful, which means pregnancy is wonderful, which means it is not a consequence to avoid, but rather a hope to cherish. So we're going to wait for the context of marriage. So important that we understand that. I'm telling you what, listen to me. Here's the, you want the good news? Kids are hungry for this. The younger generation is, listen to me. They've been starved of this. They've been starved of this. And when they get to taste it, they're like, say, that's good. Can I have some more? More, please. Yeah, I think that's powerful.
Scott Phelps during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Our thanks to Pastor Mark Moore and his leadership team for allowing us to be there. By the way, Mr. Phelps is the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign. For more information, go to nationalmarriagecampaign.com. Join conservative activist Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, Friday night, November 7th, at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. To reserve seats, go to illinoisfamily.org and click events, or call 708-781-9328. We would love to see you there. Please support the work of IFI. All donations are tax deductible and very much appreciated. Go to illinoisfamily.org and click donate or call 708-781-9328. Tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.